the afternoon, and we're grateful for you all being here. The topic I'm going to discuss today is an exploration of integrating primary care and public health, some of the challenges and opportunities that we face as we look at this. Here's this slide you've seen 3,000 times. I used this really bad joke yesterday, but if any of you do have a financial relationship that you would like to establish, please feel free to let me know. University professors were always trolling for dollars. I certainly acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the National Coordinating Center for Public Health Systems and Services Research, who funded the study that I'm working on, and additional support has been provided by staff at the University of Memphis, where I work. So a quote to lead us off: a major deterrent to our efforts to fashion healthcare that is efficient, effective, comprehensive, and personalized is our lack of a design for the synergistic interrelationship of all who can contribute. I found this quote as I was doing the background work to the study I'm on and was struck by when it was put forth. That was 1972, and we haven't made a whole lot of progress, as I think most of you can attest. There has been an increasing focus on integration in public health and healthcare services in general, especially primary care. Most of you are probably aware of the primary care and public health report that the IOM put out last year, as well as the special supplemental journal of the American Journal of Public Health on integrating primary care and public health. Both excellent resources if you want to read up more on this. But that the focus on integration has come forth, and this IOM report established five broad sweeping principles. The idea of having a shared goal of population health, community engagement in integration efforts, having leadership aligned in the idea of and supporting integration, having a structure that would allow for sustainability, and then especially in today's day and age, having data sharing and analysis capabilities that were shared and integrated at some level. And I want to step back and define integration for you, for those of you who haven't read this report. They call integration the linkage of programs and activities to promote overall efficiency and effectiveness and achieve gains in population health. So linkage of programs and activities is what we're talking about here. And they specify different types of integration, and so there's a integration at different levels, whether it's national, state, or local, agencies that are involved. The partners that are involved are very specific to those levels. At the national level, it's going to be, obviously, institutes of health, CDC, things like that. At the local level, it can be hospitals, local health societies, health departments, things like that. Again, programs and activities is what we're talking about integrating. And degrees of integration, they give this continuum, if you will. And they argue that we really don't want to be in isolation or merger on either end of the spectrum there, but to find ourselves somewhere in between, especially into this cooperation, collaboration, partnership sort of range where we can do more together. And my question comes out of this part of the PHSR research agenda, which is: what conditions and strategies facilitate productive interorganizational relationships and patterns of interaction among organizations that contribute to public health strategies, in my case, at the local level? And I wanted to take it from those broad principles, those five principles that the IOM report put out, and get into some real clear applications by talking to the folks on the ground. So I'm using a semi-structured key informant interview methodology that has interviews with key health system leaders in the Shelby County area. Shelby County is where Memphis is located. So CEOs of hospitals, hospital presidents, executive directors of healthcare associations or nonprofit groups that are in the area, deans of medical schools, et cetera. So leaders, some have been vice presidents, some have been project directors, folks from all over, but who are involved in the different sectors of the broader health system. I'm also, I should say, attempting to use survey methodology. The survey has been much harder to get people to fill out. It's hard to work with executives, I have learned, and I should have picked up on that in my years in the corporate world. But I'm doing a survey to measure some of these things more specifically. and hoping near the end of this project to develop the people who are interviewed into a practice-based research network to use the PBRN methodology to continue to drive at the question locally and move things forward. And the findings I'm going to present to you today are from these key informant interviews. My current sample includes 12 hospital health department and health-oriented community nonprofit executives from one urban county, as I mentioned. Actually have several more interviews scheduled the next couple weeks when I get back, so that should be upwards of 20 by the time this is done in this phase. And just a look at some of the participants, current or former hospital or healthcare executives, there are five that are in the study. And there's some overlap between these categories. Two former state health commissioners who have either policy or executive functions in the Shelby County, public health, nonprofit healthcare executives, four, and six of the ones who've been interviewed are current or former physicians. So they have an understanding of the system they're in, but they also understand the medical system, and a lot of them have, again, the population health notions now, too. So in terms of qualitative rigor, which is always important, I'm using two different methods right now. One is a code-recode procedure, where the coding method for the qualitative work was developed, and I stepped back, came back into it, and recoded it, and compared the two, and found a coding structure that was as similar as possible between those two sessions. And then a member checking procedure, where I'm checking my results with the informants to make sure that those make sense to them. And I'm doing that both on an iterative basis as well as an emergent basis. So I'm going back to the participants that I've already interviewed, but the ones that I've talked to, once I've done with the semi-structured interview questions, I'll talk to them about the themes and say, you know, some of the participants have said this, and you kind of hinted at that. Is this what you're saying? And so it's a way of checking those themes as they're emerging. And they've been able to clarify, they've added, they've subtracted, and it's helped to establish the rigor. And so I've picked emergent themes that have been noted by at least 9 of the 12 participants. A couple of them have been noted by all of them. But the ones that have been most frequently mentioned are these 6. Finding safe, shared, targeted issues to tackle together. Building on current or past successes, so the idea of momentum, the role of payers and the local business community, the non-healthcare groups that can help to support this, but that have an interest in healthcare. We have several large employers in Memphis. FedEx is one of them, International Paper, AutoZone are 3 of the major industries. The healthcare industry is also very large in Memphis. They talked about the importance of educating the workforce, and why the languages that and the skills that the professionals are learning keep them separate, and what we need to do to attack that and try and retrain people. They pointed out market forces like the Affordable Care Act as key drivers in integration and in motivations for hospital systems or healthcare systems that are increasingly buying up primary care practices to find a way to integrate with the public health and the population health folks, and then having a strong convening agency. So just briefly to touch a little bit more on each of these, safe, shared, and targeted issues, they found that we needed more bridges between systems. There are a couple projects that are there, but we need more very clear ways to work together. And so some groups, one of the groups that's developed is this hypertension collaborative. It's something that is very has a lot of relevance to the hospitals that the public health folks like because it's a preventive sort of approach. But interestingly enough, one of the participants on this and who came up with the idea of this hypertension collaborative says, why are we competing on this? None of us are doing a good job here. And so this idea of, listen, we can all benefit from doing something better together. So they found a common denominator. They leveraged that shared poor performance, and they've built a pretty strong collaborative around hypertension. Memphis has also had some wonderful successes recently in infant mortality and domestic violence. Memphis had one of the highest rates of infant mortality in the nation, and they've significantly cut that in the last few years from upwards of 15 to 16 out of every 1,000 births to closer to 7 or 8. And so they've cut it in half. And so they're leveraging the success of this early success coalition and the breastfeeding coalition and some of the people who were involved at higher levels to make this happen into these other areas. Domestic violence, the Domestic Violence Coalition, and then I mentioned the Hypertension Collaborative as well. We are engaging the business community, one of the national leaders in the business groups on health that are in a lot of communities is in Memphis, and she's been a fantastic resource in trying to get the business leaders to pay attention. And one of the participants even said that we need greater investment. We're still dependent on the goodwill of a lot of people, and I don't know how long we can maintain that. So they need resources. They recognize that there needs to be an established, sustainable source, much like the principle that was outlined in the IOM report. Retraining and training people. So having an educational model that creates different languages, values, and perspectives has divided us. One of the participants said, public health has never been the role of the hospitals. In medicine, you're not trained to think that way, and certainly it's just not how the system is structured. Another said, very similarly, we're simply not trained to work across the divide. And finding ways that we can do that, whether it's a lecture series, and even the way the curriculum are structured are different. The timing is so different that there hasn't been a really good way to bring the two together. And so we need to find ways to do that. Certainly the Affordable Care Act is one of the major market forces, but what are the incentives and disincentives in driving private sector collaboration? The competition in the market forces between two major hospital systems in Memphis really drives and breeds a lot of dissent and slows the process, and if Baptist does this, then Methodist wants to do something different, and the two systems fight all the time when they could be finding a lot of more shared and common ground. And the idea of needing investment in population health, that there's this substantial pool beyond traditional governmental public health that we could be doing. So not just the public health agency, and this is one of the things that everybody's wrestling with in Memphis is, what is public health, what is population health? And we'll have some literature coming forth on that as well. And then finally, making room for innovation in how services are delivered. And then the role of the convener is the sixth and final major topic that these participants hit on. We have a newer school of public health. We've been around 4 or 5 years. There's been a lot of emphasis on it in our community. But even with that, there's a divide with the University of Tennessee Health Sciences Center, where all the medical colleges are located. They're not too happy about the fact that the School of Public Health is here, even though they had a chance to have it there or to have a shared agreement. And so there's this blue-orange divide that we fight in Memphis when we could be convening around public health and population health issues. So one of the conversations is around having not just a public health institute, like there are a lot of nationally, but having a very, very intentional population health institute. Building on the role of existing health-oriented groups like the Memphis Business Group on Health that I mentioned, or we have an Aligning Forces for Quality project, the Healthy Memphis Common Table. We have an IHI Triple Aim project that's a group that's kind of developed out of that AFQ program that's leveraging the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, Triple Aim, on a community scale instead of just on an organizational scale. So certainly some things that we're doing. And what is the role of the health department in there? We recognize the health department has statutory responsibilities that transcend economics and other factors, and for others it's their choice to make a difference, is what one of the participants told us. And another one said, we're trying to convene healthcare giants with minuscule resources. And it's true. These are hospital systems in Memphis that cover the Mid-South region. So we have Arkansas and Western Tennessee and Northern Mississippi all convening right there in Memphis. So limitations, the sample size obviously is admittedly small with 12. For a qualitative study, that's not bad. Saturation, I would say, is likely close, as I'm seeing the themes are getting more repetitive, but I'm not certain that it's yet entirely achieved. There are some other folks that have a different perspective that I suspect they have a different perspective, and so I won't say that saturation is achieved until I've talked to them. And the member check-in procedure is not entirely complete. The quantitative survey data isn't yet available, and again, this is one urban county, so the generalizability or the transferability in terms of qualitative work is always the question. Some initial implications, enhancing public health and medical training with a shared language, again, building on successes in your communities. Targeting issues with shared potential to gain small wins was one of the ideas that's emerged from this, finding a way to have some wins and create some momentum. We need to do a better job of prioritizing community issues, facilitating the role of businesses and outside stakeholders, developing shared educational opportunities, strengthening governmental public health. When the city of Memphis pulled its funding for the county health department, that almost crippled them. And we need to do a better job of financing public health as a convener. Some next steps, brought in the survey, some further interviews, developing the PBRN. And I think that there are some future studies on this, exploring public health systems factors, you know, what is the role of the strength of the health department financing, the impact of incentives and disincentives from a policy standpoint, and some educational interventions. And I want to close with this perspective from one hospital president. I loved how he said this. This is his words exactly. At some level, we have both a moral and an economic imperative to change how the system works. An economic imperative to save money, reduce costs and waste, and a moral imperative to both save lives and improve health. Those with a democratic imperative, he's talking about those of us who can choose. For a given population must own it. So there's my contact information. It's on the handouts, it's on the website, and I think we're doing questions at the end. So thank you.